most people think. Hello and welcome to episode 46 of What Most People Think. How are you, people? We've got, of course, a new, another binary distinction in British society and culture that you either fall one side or the other of. Are you pro wearing face masks in shops and therefore, obviously, a good person, you know, a virtuous person? Or are you anti and therefore a bit like Thanos, i.e. you essentially want to click your fingers and kill half of all mankind? It's amazing, isn't it? This culture war, the things that get dragged into it, who'd have thought that face masks would be one of them? But listen, I hope you're well. I hope you've had a good week. Welcome to all the people that joined us for the Jonathan Pye episode with Tom Walker there. I've got a lot of new subscribers, so thanks for that. You know, it's going to be me this week. So what I do is I present it on my own most weeks, and then if I have a good guest come up, like Jonathan Pye, then I'll go for it. So I'm not gonna censor myself. Do you know what I mean? And on that count, we have a thing that we do on this show called a cuss count, which is one of my Patreons, which is, if you want to support the podcast and keep it weekly and ad free, then go to What Most People Think on Patreon and just give me money. I mean, that's where we're at in the arts, so to speak. Now we're just saying, can I have some money? Can I have some money? Is there something weird happening at the moment, like economically, where we just tap up the Chancellor for money? Does anybody else find that a bit weird? I've never known that in my lifetime, where you can just go, hey, at Rishi Sunak, I am a freelance, shareholding, dividend-paying owner of a ballet company, and I am not getting any money from the government, and I've slipped through. Can you please fund my life, please? I've got a Sony Curve TV. I've got a holiday booked. What are you saying, Rishi? Do you think at some point Rishi will eventually become like, you know, that mate that's got money, that he'll eventually go, you know what, you lot are ponces, mate. You lot are ponces, yeah? It's all about, oh, Rishi, could you throw us some wedge, yeah? All the stand-up comedians, they want a bit of money, yeah? Oh, what, after all the love they've shown us? Fuck you lot, mate. Anyway, so there was a swear word. We have the cuss count that we do for last week's episode. So from me, there were two bastards. Two bastard. I shouldn't pluralise there. Four fucks, one fuck, 19 fuckings. Again, that is staying within the 17 to 20 range that it's been at for several weeks there. And two shits. So I think overall, that is a reduction in swear words, which suggests that I was on my best behaviour with a guest. Now, Tom Walker, Jonathan Pye, he managed only one fuck, seven fuckings, one piss, two shits, and a twat. And even knowing the way that he says twat makes me smile there, because he swears with great aplomb. Some people are just great swearers, aren't they? I don't know what. There's certain cities. Let's do top three, right? Top three swearing cities. I'm going to go Glasgow. Glasgow. Anyone in Glasgow right now would be like, because there's several ways of saying Glasgow, aren't there? Is this like, if you're me, you go Glasgow. If you're sort of from the area, you go Glasgow. And if you are proper from around the area, you go Glasgow. Glasgow. Because you've got to show other people just how fucking Glasgow you are. So Glasgow would be one. I think London's good. I think we're good at swearing. You know, fuck you, cunt muppet. Cunt Muppet, that's a new character, isn't it? If they bring back the franchise. Welcome our new Muppet, it's Cunt Muppet. He's out of order. And he touches people. Because he's been touched himself. You know, that's what happens, isn't it? You keep sticking your hand up a Muppet's arse, eventually they're going to abuse someone else. So, and then I'd say Belfast. I'd arguably go Belfast 1. You know, yee, fuck you, E-man. You're a fucking wee shite. So there's certain swear words I'm jealous of. Shite is one. Doesn't sound as good. You can't really say that in a southern English accent. And pish. You know, the Scottish have pish for something. It's a really apt way of describing something that's truly abject. Coming up this week, we're going to be talking about, what subjects we talk about? Compulsory face masks. We're going to be looking at the 12-year-old that got taken into custody for racist abuse online. And then we're going to go, I've got this theory that future generations are going to look back on our generation, how we've handled COVID, and just think that we're all massive fannies. And then there'll be a hype coming up. So I've got news coming up. I am going to be doing an online tour. What a wanker. So I should have had the dates to hand. It's going to be the Thursday 6th, 7th and 8th of August online. This is a Zoom tour. This is written all for online. And I'll be telling you more about that halfway through the show. And I'm also going to be guest hosting Times Radio. You know there's a new Times Radio station? Well, for some reason, they've got someone like me in. Giles Corran wanted a weekend off, and they went, well, who's a like-for-like replacement there? And I've gone, yeah, Jeff Norcott. So how I've ever blagged this gig, I'll never know. But please listen, and, you know, if everyone's slagging me off online, trying to talk me out of work, just say I didn't think he was shit. A quick big up to the new patrons online. We've got £10 VIP patrons. These are the people that, they're doing all right. They're doing all right. What are you? They've done all right in coronavirus. What are you, currency traders or something? David Allen, Francis. I think Francis has a surname. I just might not have got that down. Jonathan Whitehead, Courtney Wallace, and Neil Harvey. They all sounded like cricketers to me, didn't they? That sounded like the lower middle order. David Allen, a sort of left-arm seamer, maybe like Sam Curran. Francis, just Francis, maybe he's from South Africa. You know, one of those sort of like sort of French-sounding South African surnames. Jonathan Whitehead, the off-spinner. the off-spinner there. Doesn't turn it much, but he's got a decent arm. I'm just losing fucking listeners, aren't I? Right now, I've gone straight in with the big cricket chat. Courtney Wallace, I mean, obviously I'm going to think of... It's not a racial thing, I'm just thinking of Courtney Walsh here, one of the greatest fast bowlers ever. And Neil Harvey, genuinely quick, Neil. Genuinely quick. Sprays it all around a bit. A bit sort of all gas, no steering wheel. So thank you to the people that attended the Patreon gig, which is why I brought this up. It was a lot of fun, and I've been doing those to sort of feed into doing this live tour thing. And I did notice that doing it on a Friday, people laughed a lot more and were a bit more drunk. And I'm going to look further into that connection and see if there's anything in that. And just a quick fuck you before we get into the subjects is the guy, I went to film a thing. This is going to sound like boasting it, but I went to film a thing for Sky Arts, which was an interview with Irvin Welsh, right, about causing offence in art. And who would you think was interviewing who? Yeah. He was interviewing me. I just thought this was hilarious. You know what I mean? The guy that wrote Trainspotting. And he's going, and I'm sitting there going, Irvin, let me tell you a few things, brother, about offence in art and stuff. You know, I'll maybe give you one or two tips. But I was running late and I just wanted something to eat. So, you know, when you kind of think, right, I want just like a pastry. They didn't have a pastry. I was like, you got bacon roll, no bacon roll. He goes, I can do your sausage bap. I'm like, fair enough. He goes, but it'll have to be a panini. I was like, fuck's sake. I don't know why that annoyed me so much, but and then he was asking me whether I wanted what sauce I want, and I was like, well, you got ketchup? And he was like, I don't know. You got brown sauce? And he said, I don't know. Then he said I think I've got tomato ketchup. I went, okay, tomato ketchup. This discussion went on for ages, and then eventually brought it out to me with no sauce at all, and it just had tomatoes on it. Okay, so face masks have become compulsory, and you know, there were some people that welcomed this news, the usual suspects, you know, the ones that like having their life managed for them by government, and there were some of us who were a little bit cautious about it, because I sort of think in a healthy democracy, anything that has the word compulsory in or mandatory is worth a little bit of scrutiny, right? And it comes after the end of another period with the government having... I know that there has been contradictory advice and the science on this still isn't clear, but it's yet another situation where the government have sort of quite close to changing their minds, indicated that they weren't going to change their minds at all and then change their minds. So before we get on with anything else, I just wonder if there's anyone from the government listening in, and they do listen. Oh, yeah. There is, you know, if we go back listening to... Anyone were listening back in the early part of this, remember when Dominic Raab was nicking one of my lines from PMQs, you know, which is very high praise for me. So it's a little three-step guide. Right, first up, what is our view on this measure, okay, to do with coronavirus and mitigation? What is our actual view, okay? Now, question two is, if enough pressure is put on us to change our minds, will we just change it anyway? Yeah. Then if so, move to question three, shall we just change it now and stop all the dicking about Yeah, and stop posturing like we're going to dig in for a position. Because this is where the government have looked weak on so many occasions, is that they've... It must be weird for ministers that are briefed to go out and, you know, kind of go out to bat for a subject and then they row back on their position a lot. But look, you know, it's a measure coming in now. It's coming in about a week's time. Will it help? It's not obvious, is it? I mean, it would seem logical that this virus is airborne. It comes out of your face. You cover your face a bit. It would probably stop as much of it being airborne. But equally, will it deter people? You know, the high street is dying, the economy is tanking, and it comes down to a personality type. What would make you feel more secure about being in a shop? Would it be people wearing face masks? Okay, because like our whole lives, that has been quite a negative thing to see. It's either meant that someone's being operated on. Do you know what I mean? There's blood. There's risk. Or would it be, you know, accepting a degree of risk to go shopping? And I don't know. I think that, you know, when you look online, you look with comedians for some reason, comedians are, it's one of those subjects. It's almost like being vegan. There's way more vegan comedians than there are normal people, right? And also with Brexit, almost all comedians voted Remain and stuff. And I think the face mask is another issue where I've struggled to find a comedian that even has the slightest suspicion of face masks. So I guess it's, you know, it's one of those positions that's favoured by the left, which is a secure moral stance, isn't it? Like, I am pro wearing face masks, and they do that thing, you know, where they touch their sort of the middle of their chest when they say it, which lets you know that they're about to say something meaningful and virtuous. I am pro wearing face masks. It's just something small that we can do to stop people dying. And they straw man the fuck out of it, and they simplify it down to that. And then I saw a lot of analogies being made, you know, about... you know, like we always, you know, the boomers and whatnot and the Brexiteers, they always talk about the Blitz generation. Do you think the Blitz generation moaned about the blackout? Do you? I think probably some of them did, just statistically. And also, I think that I don't know if it's a secure analogy. I don't think comparing the peril of being bombed from the sky by the Nazis, by the Luftwaffe, is necessarily comparable with an airborne disease, which is kind of asymptomatic for most people, right? And I don't know if you could have your house bombed asymptomatically. They dropped a bomb and it just bounced off my house. You know what I mean? Like I felt a little bit warm for a while. You know, my temperature was up. And it just, you know what bugs me is, why does it have to come down to this binary view? You know, this binary view that if you're willing, well, if you don't want to wear a face mask, you're just happy for people to die. You mean, all right, you took it all the way there to the die thing. And you think, look, let's just clarify, the average age of death for this thing is 84. And even then they began, oh, what, so it's just okay for 84-year-olds to die? I'm like, no, look, hey, they've had a good innings. That's all I'm saying. They've been about a little bit. I've expressed my views on old people before. I personally cannot see any point in living a day over 80. And even 80 is the top whack. I'd like to go at 70 when there's still a bit of tragedy about it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm still vigorous enough that people are like, oh, it's such a shame. Where it was, instead of everybody being at a funeral, sort of pretending they're gutted, but thinking, thank fuck, that is over. And yeah, with this measure, I can kind of live with this measure. I mean, I've got questions about it. Like, how do you get out of it? It's like lockdown itself. It's very easy to just start something, isn't it? But then it will make people feel secure. And one thing that we've learned about lockdown, it was like, stay at home, protect the NHS, save lives, be amazing by doing fuck all. When it came to the point where people had to stop doing that, it made people very uneasy, because once you said stay at home equals save lives, right, the implication was leave the house, kill people, right? So, you know, wear a mask, stop spread of disease. Don't wear masks, spread disease, right? And I think that people will struggle with whenever we repeal this. I don't know, there could be upsides to it, I guess. Like, if it means that we can get people back in football stadiums, yeah, or indeed people back in live comedy, although that would look a bit weird, standing there on the stage just staring out of, like... I would find that so weird. It would look like there was a few hundred people that were going to medically experiment on me the moment the gig was on, and like me doing the gig was some kind of pre-op thing of just testing where his mental health's at. Right, yes, we can experiment on the subject. And yeah, I'm going to own that. that when you do evil science, it has to be a Nazi... Sorry. It has to be... And that's not even a German accent I just did there. That's a Nazi accent. And look, you might think that that is sort of xenophobic, but I'll tell you something. You watch Star Wars, all the baddies, English. Yes, kill him. You know, how many baddies have been English over the years in films? We've done some good stuff too, but it seems in Hollywood we're just pricks the whole time. And, you know, speaking of films and speaking of Star Wars, there's that great line from Natalie Portman in Revenge of the Sith that makes me think about the reception of this news of face masks becoming compulsory in shops, where she says, "So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause." It's a great line. I'm not sure she really carries it. Not sure she really carries that line. Yeah, and it just makes me, it makes me uneasy. And you get some debate around it, like I saw on like GMB, you know, because they're obviously a great vestige of reasoned debate at the moment, is that, you know, and they were saying, if you see people not wearing masks, should you challenge them? Yeah, that's fine. A national broadcaster just sort of loosely floating the idea that we should be encouraging vigilantism. And it's just, if people just don't understand other people's mindsets. Some people say, "Well, Jeff, why is it such a small thing to do? Why is it a big deal to you?" And I think, why is such a big deal, like state intervention, such a small thing to you? You know, maybe we're just not going to understand each other. But I do find that increasingly, I'm on certain sides of the argument where I'm always the baddie. You know, if I vote Tory, I'm selfish, right? If I vote Brexit, I'm racist. Now, if I have any kind of reservations about wearing a mask in a shop, I'm sort of pandemic genocidal. And I thought, you know, I've fought this for so many years. I think maybe it's time to give in and go, yeah, maybe I am just a hateful prick. Okay, just to butt in here with the hype. So, yes, my show, my online show. Why am I talking like this? My show, I sounded like Johnny Vaughan. My show, Jeff Norcott's Fringe in Your Lounge. No, what? I don't even know the fucking name of it. This is a great way of showing, suggesting that it hasn't just been thrown together. No, look, I've worked on this show. It's Jeff Norcott's Front Room Fringe, and I've been doing new material gigs with the Patreon community, and I'll be doing some gigs. I've been doing some gigs outside of that as well. And I've got together, I think, a really funny hour of stand-up, because there's so much that has happened. So we've been talking about cancel culture, we'll be talking about statues, we'll be talking about all the shit that's happened in pandemic, we'll be talking about, you know, the difference between men and women, which has somehow become contentious again. How the hell did that become contentious? So that will be, this podcast will have gone up Thursday morning, so general sale, and there might still be some early bird tickets, because the early birds have, first dibs have gone to Patreon and the mailing list, which you can still sign up for. They'll be on sale from midday, and I think it's the early bird tickets are a fiver, and then the VIP front row access, which is a lot of fun, which people are where I can see you and hear you, and you can speak to me when spoken to, obviously. They will be £6 in the early bird, so there's an early release of those. And then the general sale will be £7 main entry, and then £8 VIP. And I'm going to try and do a few things technically to make it seem more like a stand-up experience. You know, I'm going to get a little backdrop going, you know, Well, it's a backdrop. I'm going to get a backdrop going is the main thing. I might even have a little, get some crowd hubbub noise. You know that noise when everyone's taking their seats for a show? I might do that. I just could feel people being underwhelmed there. Oh, yeah, that's great. That annoying noise of people chatting. Yeah, that's really going to transport me to the Edinburgh Fringe. And then, as I say, I'll be doing Times Radio on Friday, which is, the 17th of July, sitting in for Giles Corran. So if you could listen to that and give them some feedback, you know, saying that it wasn't totally shit, that would help. And just quickly, while I'm hyping, we've got to say hello to some three middle tier, the £5 patrons, George Hone, Richard Dutton, and Andrew Burgess. I often like to, you know, group them in as a kind of sort of band, and I would say that's a classic indie band. That is a late 90s Britpop-y type thing. I think this is almost like a post Verve style, the Verve style lineup: Hone, Dutton, and Burgess. Just a three piece banging out. You know, maybe like a little precursor to emo, just singing their songs about, "I'm so afraid, I'm so scared, 'cause I'm middle class and I don't know risk." Thank you. Okay, now we're on a story about the 12-year-old boy being arrested, right? So what happened was the footballer, Wilfried Zahar, he got up one morning. There was some horrible, horrible racist abuse, right? And Wilfried Zahar shared it. Now, first up on this bit, before anyone tries to pin me for anything, this isn't on Wilfried Zahar what happened next. He's absolutely... I mean, what a disgusting thing to wake up to. And if you look at the racism itself, it's brutal, right? So he shared it. He doesn't know that the kid's 12, right? He doesn't know. It's one of the things about Instagram. Should kids even have Instagram accounts at 12? I don't know, right? So this isn't on him. But then what happened after that was that Solihull Police or West Midlands Police swooped in, like the old Bill do now. Anything that happens online, woo, woo, they're there in a heartbeat, aren't they? Do you know what I mean? They're like superheroes, like, you know, Superman just rocking up just in a heartbeat. They're there. Someone said something out of order online. Down, down, down. The online fucking Sweeney get mobilised, don't they? And they were there and they took this 12-year-old boy into custody. And he's a boy, right? He's not even a teenager yet. I just sort of started thinking, was this a proportionate reaction here? Is this a sensible reaction? I mean, what the kid said was disgusting, right? It's proper heinous racism. But this is what happens with racism. It's always, we get in this kind of Olympics to who can say the most, you know, who can be the most appalled about it, right? This is what happens, is you get people in authorities, police, within football saying it's disgusting, we have a zero tolerance, I was appalled, right? Obviously, if you're a decent person, you cannot see that and not be appalled, right? So all we're really doing is showcasing our virtue. That's all I'm doing right now. So why don't we actually move on to the subject right now? Is just say... The amount of people online, and I always think that Twitter, you know, is not necessarily a gauge of anything, but it was interesting to see the amount of people that thought that the book should be thrown at this kid, you know what I mean? Like, put him in jail, that'll teach him. You know, this is left wing. That sounded like very much like an old right wing thing, you know, flog him and burn him and... I don't know, burn him, maybe I've gone too far. What is it? Flog him, I don't know, kill him, whatever. But it's coming from the left. It's the people are saying that 12-year-olds should be almost, you know, dealt with as adults. And... I thought, you know, 12-year-olds, if they can be tried or dealt with as an adult by the police, why can't they smoke, right? Then, if they're being legally dealt with, why can't they smoke? Why can't 12-year-olds just rock up and just buy 20 B&H, right? Why can't 12-year-olds drive then, if they're being legally tried as adults? Why can't 12-year-olds vote? And there probably are some lefties right now going, actually, I'm really pro that. Fuck you, 12-year-olds should be able to vote. You shouldn't be able to vote until you've got a mortgage, but that's a... That's another... You got to have skin in... You got to have fiscal skin in the game from my point of view. And I just... you know, the thing about this is, is there consistency in the rules here? Like, so obviously racism at the moment is a real focal point for everybody, and they've gone in very hard on this kid. Fair enough. Would they go in as hard for other kinds of abuse, you know? Like fat shaming. That's probably not the best example. But other kinds of use, like a 12-year-old being a bit stalky, do you know what I mean? Like, or a 12-year-old being a bit sexually aggressive online, would they take the kid into custody? I don't know. It does seem that because of the political, small P political environment we find ourselves in, you know, there was that bloke that took a piss over the monument during the statue protectors march. I don't even know that one has a name yet. He got a book thrown at him. And then, of course, there was that fuck with the flew the All Lives Matter banner over. Now, obviously, you know, I wasn't supportive of his action, but I think the guy lost his job, and then his girlfriend lost her job. And that's what I suppose people are looking for here, is just some kind of consistency in reaction. And the other thing that I'm wondering is what dumb shit would you have done online at 12 years old? You know, I wouldn't have done what this kid done. You know, thankfully, good news, I wasn't a racist. I wasn't a fucking idiot. But I was also a 12-year-old boy. If social media had existed, you know, if I'd have been able to contact Pamela Anderson at the age of 12, I don't know what I'd have said. I don't know what I'd like to think that I wouldn't have sent a dick pic, but I don't know. What, and then people start going like, this guy's a sexual offender, like, take him into custody. Yeah, I'm going to sound really popular here. What happened to a good old clip around here from the from the local Bobby, you know, and Stern talking to from the parents? I think that the police should have gone in hard on this, but did they have to take the kid into custody? I don't know, maybe it's making an example of the easy thing, isn't it? You know, like, you've got this resurgence of far-right activity in adults and stuff, and, you know, they're finding that difficult to police, but then you've got this 12-year-old, it's easier just... get them in custody. The police in this instance, I feel a little bit like the teachers that only deal harshly with the good kids. I used to do that. I used to do that when I was a teacher. You know, like the genuinely scary kids, you just pretend that you didn't hear what they just called you. And then the good kid steps out of line once. You're like, all right, you little shit. Come here. Right, I'm not tolerating this. I'm not tolerating this for any of you. So like I say, I think that there is a danger that when people feel strongly enough about a subject, they can kind of lob some fairly long-standing principles, guiding principles at heart. And one of them is the biggest thing in law is the age of like responsibility. What age are you when you do things? How legally responsible are you? And honestly, man, if you're sitting there thinking like a 12-year-old should be put in jail for some posts on social media, then I think that you're kind of a populist.
What most people think.
All right, final big subject this week. Speaking of the young'uns, right? I was thinking about how future generations will view what's happening at the moment. And it just occurred to me that young people in the future might think that, you know, the way that we've handled COVID and our reaction to it, that we are essentially massive fannies, right? To put it in a technical term. And bear me out, right? Bear me out. So we've had 3 weeks where the excess deaths have been below the 5-year average, right? Now, that could change, obviously, with a winter, if there's a second spike. And even if it carried on for a while, I don't think it's going to wipe out the excess deaths from this year. However, it could end up being a number that's not wildly out of line with the last 5 to 10 years, right? If you look at the excess deaths during 2017 to 18, that was, 50,000 through flu. For some reason, no one gave a fuck. I don't know why. Because you know, it didn't start in China. I think there's obviously a presumption that young people are now in this perennial tailspin of risk aversion, that they're always going to become more sensitive and more mollycoddled. However, what we now have is we have a generation of children who, for the first time, have had to live through something genuinely stressful and traumatic, right? You know, they've had the old temperature forehead checks, right? When they go to school, they've can't hug grandma. Connor, grandma might have been a result for some of them, you know, grandmas. They're lovely, but some of them, well, they smell a bit weird. they've been watching Piers Morgan freaking out on the breakfast telly, you know, just sitting there while their mum's getting ready and just eating their multi-grain shapes, just watching Piers Morgan just, you know, flailing around behind his desk. So what does it do? Now, does that make them more or less resilient? You could say, well, it'll give them these kind of like issues for life, and it'll give them these fears around germs. On the other hand, right, the wartime generation, they went through some shit, and I would say that they came out of it, broadly speaking, as more resilient and more durable. Yeah, I say that, you know what I mean? A lot of them, you know, smoked 80 a day and had drink problems as well. So, you know, I suppose you've got to throw in that that caveat. But I guess what I'm saying is that at some point, you know, once they're adults, they're going to ask what the fuck went on here. They're going to ask a lot of questions. They're going to ask about, did we really need to lock down as strictly as we did? Did we need to crash the economy and burden future generations with debt? I mean, the furlough, right? I mean, my God, when they're paying 50% income tax, right, they're going to look at that furlough in the same way, well, even more so than we look at maintenance grants. You know how millennials and Generation X, Z rather, they look at, like, what you got paid to go to university? They're going to look at, like, hang about, what, you 8.4 million adults were getting their salary paid. They're just sitting at home. So what would they do? I guess they did something. Maybe they did something to give back to the state there, you know, maybe they fixed some churches or some village halls or use that time to... No? Okay, so it was mainly watching Disney Plus, was it? And arguing about statues. All right, fair, that's time well spent. And, you know, blokes seeing what they would look like as a woman on a gender swap app and then saying, I would. Okay, well, great, that's great. And it's great that, you know, you got the pubs fully open before we went back to school. I think they're going to have a lot of questions about how we acted during this time. And we don't know at the moment, right? We think that it's airborne transmitted. It might come out that it's, you know, that wasn't the main method of transition. I don't know. There's going to be a lot that emerges about this in time, and they're going to be operating with the benefit of hindsight, you know, and they're going to be angry and maybe a bit simplistic about what went on during this period. You know, the same way that we look at boomers that did well out of the housing market, and we never think about the financial risk that they took to get on that housing ladder. We never think about the fact that interest rates used to be a lot higher, so their monthly payments weren't fuck all, and also that food used to cost a lot back then. We're just like, nah, man, with the housing market, you basically, you bought a scratch card and you won every single time. You know, we've sort of calibrated it back to suit our own narrative. But they're going to ask questions. They're going to ask questions like people going to Spain, right? They go, hang on, so you're supposed to wear, it was airborne, right? That's what you thought at the time. But you went Spain. You're like, yeah, we did go Spain. Okay, but we wore masks in the cabin. And like, okay, but in a plane, isn't the cabin air all recycled continually? And you're like, yeah, they did. That's true. But we just really wanted to go Spain, basically. Meanwhile, some of us realised that we'd always wanted to be locked down forever, and actually were angry when civil liberties were returned to us, and we're grateful when we were told things that we couldn't do. Well, you can understand. What I'm basically saying, son, you know, I know you're four now, one day maybe you'll listen to this, is that, look, I kept working, son. If you want to be angry, just look at the fucking furloughs. Let's demonise, this would be a good right-wing narrative now. Let's demonise the furloughs. But look, I'm just saying, it's an interesting idea to contemplate, is that one day, just like the boomers were accountable for their thing, maybe Generation X, those of us around that 40-odd, we're going to have to account for this time, and we better get our story straight. Okay, we've got a couple of letters here now. If you want to, if I've said anything that's wound you up or you think needs correcting, I could always do with a fact-checking. I could fact-check the shit out of me. If I feel it, I say it. Write in at whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. And I don't care, man. You give me grief, agree with me, whatever. I do enjoy relating to people. Now, just going back a couple of episodes here, we had Dan, who runs a company called Chash Tea, C-H-A-S-H, right? And he was horrified to hear that I was drinking Yorkshire tea and thinking that Yorkshire tea was a good tea. No, he's horrified to hear that I thought Starbucks was a good tea bag. And I would say, Dan, I still do think that, Dan. However, Dan was good enough to issue a taste challenge, right? Which is that he sent me some of his tea bags. And I'm gonna have a sip now. This is the breakfast cuppa, okay? That was a cliche drinking. I needed you to know that I drunk. So if those of you into that ASMR shit, that's a good cup of tea, Dan. That is a good cup of tea. I'm going to have another little sip of that. Hang on. Not getting paid for this, by the way, you pricks. I just got some free tea. That's a good cup of tea. Now, I would say that is, you know, just to give the consumer a... if it's one of the first time you're listening to this podcast, you think, where has this gone? He's talking about social, political issues, and now he's doing a tea test. Look, we don't do this all the time. I am willing, though, just to get free stuff. If people want to send me other things to try, other tea, you know, it's a competitive market out there. But that's a good tea, Dan. Chash tea. It feels, do you know what it is? Like, it's not like as overwhelming in terms of taste as Yorkshire tea or something like that. But it's clean. Do you know what I mean? If that was gear, you know, if that was grammar, that hasn't been cut with anything, you know. It's probably like what tea should be like, if you know what I mean. Yorkshire tea, they've just gone in there. Like, let's whack them over fucking head with it, yeah? Let's whack them, like, give the strongest fucking tea we can. Whereas Chash tea, it's like, look, man, you're going to be wanting to drink this shit all day. Okay, got another letter here. This is from Richard in Sheffield, so we'll stick with Yorkshire accent. Great to see these drive-in gigs taking place. But any chance of them coming up north out of the southern bubble? I'm deliberately sounding as fucking idiotic as I can, to be annoying. Believe it or not, we have built car parks up here. That's a, that's a brilliantly Yorkshire bit of humour, bit of sarcasm at the end from Richard. Yeah, I didn't know that, mate. I didn't know that there weren't car park gigs up north. That is a disgrace. It's disgrace. It is embarrassing, you know, with my industry. We always claim to be so inclusive, but they don't give a fuck about the North. Don't give a fuck. Apologies for that. I'll come up. I'll do a gig in a car park, but I'll pick the wrong car park. I'll do like an NCP. And then in the end, not everyone refused to pay a ticket because basically it'd be there an hour. They had to fucking remortgage.
What most people think.
Okay, next letter is from... So this is from, I'm going to read this whole letter here because I think this is important. So a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about predatory men within comedy. There was a debate about that. And I was asking for, you know, what is the lie of the land with young people now in and around the idea of consent? So I'm going to read this whole thing because this is very interesting. This is from Ashley. It says, all right, Jeff. Just listen to your bit in the podcast about the issues of consent and predatory men. Much like you, I never had the discussion about consent. I was just brought up with a very treat others with respect mindset. I've only just turned 18, and the consensus with men of my age tends to be quite similar. It's just common sense not to touch someone appropriately in any context. Yeah, absolutely. A lot of women my age, though, and seemingly most women in general, seem to think that the vast majority of men are leery, evil perverts, and a large percentage of them seem to have had bad experiences. So it's quite obvious that there are at least a few men letting the side down. And it's quite obvious who they are. I mean, just breaking in here, this is one of the problems, right? So this is when kind of like Me Too happened, is that they are... Almost every woman will have had experiences of sexual harassment and stuff like that. And that gives the impression that it's a lot of men doing it. But the truth is, these wrong-uns... If they're wrong on that level, they're not just going to do it once, are they? They are going around. And I guess if that happens to you, if you feel sexually put upon in that way, you're going to remember, like any bad experience. Do you know what I mean? Like if you fell off a fucking bridge, you're gonna have a thing about bridges, right? So I do get that from women's point of view, but I do see how dangerous it must be. Jesus, man, I would not want to be 18 and male right now. I'm sorry, you know, I don't care what the fuck people think about male privilege. I would. That is a confusing. A confusing lie of the land. I appreciate this insight, though, actually, so I'll carry on reading. So he says, regarding these kind of leery men, it's quite obvious who they are. You can kind of tell they've most likely never had any level of parental guidance on any subject matter. Do you think neglectful or poor parenting is in some way to blame for men who don't have respect for women's boundaries? Yeah, I mean, as I was saying, actually, I think that it comes down to, my view is it comes down to where's your dial in you? Like, what, are you a good human? Are you a bad human? You know, do you want to make people uncomfortable? That is the main first thing you can do. And then after that, I suppose you can have a specific discussion around consent. But like I say, you know, my mum, she never said anything specific to me. And yet I knew. But maybe that is just, you know, that is an exception. And at some point, you've got to have like, I mean, it's not weird. Great chat with your son, but like, let's get down to brass tacks in terms of details. What I don't know is like, so quite often when I've had sex, it's been, you know, and part of the appeal of it is like this understood thing. It moves to a next point, and that's kind of what's exciting about it, right? I don't know when you just stop and go, are we gonna do the sex? And I, look, and if you think I'm being like bloody minded for the sake of it, I am a bit, but. That's what I don't understand is kind of like, is there something sexy about things progressing? Do you get my drift by this? So, I mean, I suppose using a condom is useful in that respect, isn't it? Because it's like a prop to that. Yeah, that's what this is where a dialogue could be constructive, right? Is that you just go, should I get my condom? I mean, that never sounds sexy anyway. You're never going to get around that. At that point... You're gonna know, right? And she says, "No." You're gonna go, "Well, then we're not having sex here." And also, lads, you know, you need to be when you're young. You need to be wearing the condoms anyway, because you know, I ain't saying she a gold digger. I don't know where I'm going with this. What I'm basically saying is, as a young man, you need to protect yourself because, you know, the one thing Kanye said was true: is she got you for 18 years. Okay, so here is where you can kill two birds, lads, with one stone. On the one hand, right. You've got a visual prop that doesn't mean you have to ask in a weird way, are we going to have sex now? You just kind of like, yeah, so get this thing here, yeah, should we? Okay. No. And if she says like, no, I want a bareback. You go, okay, like somebody, then a woman has to have a very strong argument as to why that's okay. And now the shoe's on the other foot. Okay. This is what's exciting about the change in gender politics. Now she needs your consent, Ashley. Okay, no, I don't necessarily want to take that risk with you. I want proof. Go get her to go to the medicine cabinet. Yeah, I want to see you take a pill in front of me. Look, this has really lost its way, but I think that the key learnings from this, condom can be an effective prop for consent, and also you do not want to be a dad at 18. All right, we've got one more letter here. Morning, Captain. I've been pondering the whole Patreon thing. And initially, it was the issue of accidentally going overdrawn and knocking you as I'm unwaged. But my main concern is it will change our whole relationship where you would have been the alpha dog and all of a sudden it will be like I'm the sugar daddy. Either leaving a few quid on your bedside unit or trying to tuck it down your buttoned-up polo shirt, telling you to get yourself something nice. This is from Dodgy Dave. So interesting there. Obviously, I want as many Patreons as possible. And, you know, people that are Patreons will attest the more that I get, the more that I'm doing from it, because it just means that, you know, it's all outside the mainstream, guys. You know, I'm off the grid in a certain respect. I hear you, you know, the sugar daddy thing. I never really thought of it like that. I'll be anyone's bitch. Do you know what I mean? I like money. I might even invent another tier, like a penis Patreon tier. You want to see the penis? 20 quid a month. You get a monthly shot. It'll be like you've adopted like a zebra or something. You can just see how my cock's getting on. I have no idea what it's going, but I thought it was funny, Dodgy Dave. But I wouldn't let that. I'm still the man, Dave. I'm always going to be the man. You know what I mean? And But I do need the money. You know, you've hit on something quite possible there. So I'm going to try and keep my masculinity as I end this bit by doing a pull-up on the bar. That is the end of episode 46 of What Most People Think. Thank you to all the regular listeners. Thank you to the people who joined us for Jonathan Pye and stuck with us for this. I will have other guests coming up. Okay, as usual, we're going to just end the show here by reading out. Anybody that leaves me a 5-star review, guaranteed read out. And we had a few for the last week. So, first up from Nessa Sands. Is that Nessa as in like Barry Island Nessa? I spent a decent Saturday with cricket on the telly. And Jeff's back catalogue in my ears. It's eased my first post-lockdown pub hangover, no end. Yes, Jeff, I'm one of those women who drinks pints and smokes roll-ups. Well, you know, look, we all have our crosses to bear. Look, I know that there are women out there. I can't lie to you. The pints thing, great. Roll-ups, just surely there's someone in your life that can sort you out some filter tips, Nessa. Thank you for restoring my faith in humanity, brackets. A bit. Well, look, Nessa, maybe we could have a pint and a roll up together at some point. This is Funky B90. Hey, Funky B90. Hey, as a lefty, it's hard to listen to right-wing comedy and find it funny. Brackets. It's also hard to listen to a lot of left-wing comedy these days too, which is why Jeff is a breath of fresh air. He welcomes debate rather than shutting it down, and whether you agree with his views or not, it's a good listen to a dissenting voice who also happens to be funny too. He's either far alt-right or namby-pamby centrist, depending on your politics. But he's definitely entertaining. Listen, man, that's exactly what I want. I think too many people are preaching to their own choir at the moment, you know? And that's with right-wing comedy and left-wing comedy. I think that's too fucking easy, right? Let's try and build a coalition. I want reluctant laughter. That's the best sound in the world. For me, is a lefty that I make them laugh and then they hate themselves. this is... This is from Mr. Average, 75. Or is that 7.5? Because I would argue that 7.5 is slightly above average. Not that I'm giving away anything there. Love listening to this podcast. I'm now a fully paid up member of the middle class, but was born into a working class family. Listening to Jeff reminds me of my laughter-filled youth. We all... Don't you miss that? You know, Mr. Average, you know, just being at school, just being at the back of GCSE science... Just being horrifically politically incorrect to make each other laugh. I think that was probably the happiest I ever was. Either that or being stoned playing PlayStation and trying to psych out my friends. I don't know if you ever did that, just trying to trash talk your friends and put them off and then just see who had little psychological weaknesses. I'm not a good person. Deadly Lionfish. Just found a podcast. Brilliant at last. Reasonable and balanced discussion. That's from Paul. And then finally, from Yayan Reese one. Look, if I do this Welsh accent, it's going to end up somewhere near Hyderabad. Hyderabad? As someone that would describe themselves as economically centrist and socially libertarian, I find Jeff's podcast incredibly refreshing. I find his don't care about the far left attitude brilliant. And even if you are someone on the far left, his analysis is generally coming from where a lot of people are and is very funny. So I'm going to stick with the Welsh accent here to close the show. I realise it's gone West Country, hasn't it? It was always going to go West Country. I feel much more secure doing this accent. But listen, thank you very much for listening to What Most People Think. And I'm off to fuck my sister.